Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller. Together we're learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on the top of Daf Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph. That's 24a. We're continuing a line of inquiry that we started in the last two recordings, which is about the topic of Avilut, or mourning, on Shabbat. Is there mourning on Shabbat or not mourning on Shabbat? So in our Gemara, we discussed a dispute between B'nai Yehuda and B'nai Galil, the people of the south and the people of the north in Israel, as to whether or not there is Avilut on Shabbat or not Avilut on Shabbat. And what we were discussing there is not so much that there is full Avilut on Shabbat or no Avilut on Shabbat at all, but whether or not there might be a middle ground. And as we'll see, the final conclusion of the Gemara, or Rabbi Yochanan, which we'll get to in our next recording, is that Dvarim Shebitzina, things that are private, may still be accustomed to do on Shabbat, but things that are public, and we'll discuss what those things are not done on Shabbat. That's the middle view. So the opinion that says Yesh Avilut on Shabbat says that there is some kind of mourning on Shabbat, but only the private things on Shabbat. And the particular thing we talked about in the previous recording was Tashmish Amita, sexual relations between a husband and a wife, which is private. And so perhaps an Avel who is not allowed to have Tashmish Amita would not be allowed to do so on Shabbat with his wife, or vice versa with her spouse, with her husband, on Shabbat, because since it's a private matter of Avilut, if you're still Nohag, if you're still practicing Avilut in private, you wouldn't be able to do it. On the opinion that says there's no Avilut at all, then you would be able to do it even though it's private. So that is, that's the question we're dealing with. Also, we also discussed briefly, it was a question of what is mourning's relationship to Shabbat. In our Mishnah, we explained that Shabbat counts as one of the days of mourning. Whether or not you actually observe aspects of mourning on Shabbat, it counts as one of the 7 days of Shiva, and it does not truncate, it does not end the Shiva process. So there definitely is some kind of Avilut on Shabbat, at least it counts as one of the days. The question is whether or not there are any observances of Avilut that happen on Shabbat or not. So from the top of the Amud, we continue this inquiry. Be'amine Rabbi Yochanan Mishmuel. Rabbi Yochanan inquired of Shmuel, Yesh Avilut b'Shabbat? Is there Avilut on Shabbat? O ein Avilut b'Shabbat? Or is there no mourning on Shabbat? Amar Leh, Shmuel responded to Rabbi Yochanan, ein Avilut b'Shabbat. There is no Avilut b'Shabbat. It seems like what Shmuel means here is that there's no Avilut at all. There is zero observance of Shabbat, which would include, possibly, Tashmish Amita, sexual relations. As Tosfos points out, it seems like Rabbi Yochanan does not accept this answer, because at the end of the sugya, Rabbi Yochanan concludes that Dvarim Shebitzina, things that are done in private, are noheg, are kept on even on Shabbat. Now the next line of the Gemara is confusing. It can be read in one of two ways. If we're continuing the topic of Shabbat, then we'd read it as follows. Yatvei Rabbanan kamei d'Rav Papa. The rabbis sat in front of Rav Papa, v'ka'amri mishmei du Shmuel, and they said in the name of Shmuel, Avel, a mourner, sheshimei shmitato bimei evlo, who has sexual relations during his mourning period, chayav mita, is liable for death. Now this is clearly some kind of guzma, this is hyperbole, because even if one were to violate such a rule, the strongest punishment that there could be would be lashes, or it's a lav, it's just a negative commandment, would not be liable for death, and certainly not liable for mita bidei shamayim. So it's some kind of hyperbole. It means perhaps not on a legal level, but on a philosophical level, or a moral level, that this person should be liable for death. Now, if we're continuing the discussion of Shabbat, then we're only talking about an avel who has sexual relations on Shabbat. In other words, if we conclude against Shmuel, yesh avilut b'Shabbat, that there is some avilut b'Shabbat, that would mean that you're not allowed to have tashmish amita on Shabbat, because in a private matter, you should still be comporting yourself as an avel. And if you were to go against that viewpoint, you would be liable for death. It's also strange, because since it's a machloket, it's not as if there's such a clear, certainly not in this conversation, at that point, a clear conclusion as to whether or not it's even wrong to do it or not. The other possible way of reading this is that it's not related to Shabbat, that we've actually switched topics temporarily. We've digressed, although we were talking about Shabbat a second ago. Now we're simply talking about Tashmish Hamita, And it may be connected to our previous Gemara because, as we said, the nafka mina between yesh avilu b'shabbat or ein avilu b'shabbat, the difference between whether or not you hold or is Shabbat or not Shabbat, one of the main differences, or the one difference that's mentioned, is tashmi shamita. So perhaps the Gemara is just taking up that topic, but the question here, or the statement that says the person who has tashmi shamita during their mourning period would not mean only on Shabbat, but during the whole 7 days of Shiva. So it's possible to read it either way. It happens to be the halacha is that a mourner is not allowed to have tashmi shamita for the 7 days. Okay, Amar Le Rav Papa. So Rav Papa says, Asur Itmar. It shouldn't say that he's liable for death. That's going too far. He says instead you should say that it's Asur to have Tashmi Shamita. Umishmeid Rabbi Yochanan Itmar. And it should not be said in the name of Shmuel, because after all we saw that Shmuel holds that there is no Avilut on Shabbat. So why would he hold this person responsible for Tashmi Shamita? At least that makes sense if we read it as we're talking about having marital relations on Shabbat. So instead of having it in the name of Shmuel, it should be said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. So we would change that statement that we said just a minute ago. He argues that the sages had an incorrect girsa, and the proper girsa would be that it is aser for an avel to be mishamesh mitato bimei evlo, and that statement should be said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. V'i shmielechu, and if you heard something, if you have a teaching, mishmei de Shmuel, on this topic or similar topic, which is related to Shmuel, hachi shmielechu, this must be the teaching that you're thinking of. Amar Rav Tachlifa bar Avimi Amar Shmuel, Rav Tachlifa, the son of Avimi, said in the name of Shmuel, Avel, a mourner, shelo para vishelo pireim, who did not let his hair grow out and who did not tear his clothes, chayav mita, he is the one that is liable for death. So you had the part about it being a mourner correct, and you had the part about being liable for death correct, but it wasn't about tashmi shamita, but it was really about priya and prima, about letting one's hair grow and tearing one's clothes. And this has a clear source. Shenemar, it's not a raya, but it's an asmachta, as it says in the parsha related to Aaron's sons, after Nadav and Avihu die, it says, Rashechem al tifrau, do not let your hair grow out. In other words, if you were a mourner, you would let your hair grow out. But since you are Kohanim who are serving in the Mishkan right now, you are not allowed to act as mourners, so don't let your hair grow out. Ubigdechem lo tifromu, and don't tear your clothes. If you were a mourner, you would tear your clothes, but since you are Kohanim who are serving in the Mishkan, you can't tear your clothes. Vilo tamutu, and by not doing so, you will not die. So there is a connection there between priya and prima, growing out your hair and tearing your clothes and dying. Now, there are two ways to read this particular verse: the juxtaposition of dying and priya and prima can be read in one of two ways. One way is do not mourn or you will die. In other words, Hashem has told you that you have to act as kohanim now, and you're not allowed to mourn. And if you violate Hashem's rule and you mourn, then Hashem will kill you. That it's a capital case for you. And if that's the way you read it, then it's really just about the Bnei Aharon in their particular case. However, the other way of reading it is that they were afraid that if they didn't do mourning, they would be liable for death. And so Hashem has to come tell them, don't worry, in this situation where I need you to act as Kohanim, even though you're not doing your mourning procedures, you won't die. In other words, one who doesn't mourn properly, who doesn't let his hair grow out and doesn't tear his clothing, usually is liable for death. And that's how Shmuel is reading it. Shmuel is saying that the Bnei Aaron were afraid that they would be liable for death by not mourning for their brothers, or Aaron mourning for his son. So then the Gemara understands, ha'acher, anyone else besides these Kohanim, shelo para v'shelo pireim, who doesn't let their hair grow out and doesn't tear their clothes, chayav mita, is liable for death, based on that verse. Okay, Amar Rafram Bar Papa, continuing this line of inquiry, Rafram, the son of Papa, said, Tana be'evel rabati, it was taught in a collection of Braitas that's known as Evel Rabati, the larger tractate of mourning, which is one of the Masechtot Ketanot, one of the later Masechtot that are Mishnayot, but really Braitot, that are added onto the Gemara. So there's the Evel Rabati, and an Evel Zutarti. So this is an Evel Rabati. We sometimes call this, as Rashi points out, Masechet Smachot, and a form of euphemistic way of talking about it. Instead of calling it the tractate of mourning, we call it the tractate of joy, but it means the opposite. So he says, it's written in Evel Rabbati, in Masachet Smachot, Avel asur l'shamesh mitato b'mei avlo. A mourner is forbidden to have sexual relations with a spouse, b'mei avilo, during the days of their mourning. And this is halachas paskin in Shulchan Aruch as well. Umase, and there was a story, be'echad, with a certain guy, one guy, sheshimesh mitato b'mei avlo, who did have tashmish hamita during his period of mourning, Vishamtu Chazir Megviato, and after he died, the swine, the pigs, ravaged his body. So this seems like a sign that what he did was incorrect. Now some people say that it ravaged his body in general, just that it was like a nivul hamet, it just despoiled the corpse. And some people say it despoiled the corpse in a particular place, in his private part, suggesting that that was the nature of his sin. And that this is why it was done to him. But it is interesting that it doesn't say that he was liable for death or that he died early for the sake of the sin, only that after he died, his body was not treated respectfully because of the sin. Okay, so we have sort of drifted away from talking directly about whether or not there's avilut on Shabbat to talk about the topic. Other topics about tashmish hamita for an avel and growing one's hair out and tearing one's clothes. We talked about each of those things, and it could be that we were talking about those things specifically related to Shabbat, or it could be that we were talking about them in general. But now we return to the topic of mourning on Shabbat, and we're going to follow Shmuel's point of view, even though it's said in the name of Shmuel, who seems to say there is no avelut in Shabbat. Here's how Shmuel says it. Amar Shmuel. Pachaz chova, neter reshut. So these are two acronyms. Pachaz is going to stand for, as we'll see in a second, priat harosh, which is uncovering the head. Chazarat kera la'achorav, turning the tear in one's clothing to the back so that it is not visible. And zekifat hamita, which is raising up one's bed that's been turned over for mourning. These things are chova. So what Shmuel is saying is that when you come to Shabbat, you would have been doing three things to show you were mourning. One is atifat harosh, you would cover your head. We don't do this anymore, but it was a custom to sort of cover your head, almost like a cowl, so that the tip of your robe was over your face. So when it got to Shabbat, you had to uncover your head in order to show that you were not publicly mourning on Shabbat. When you were a mourner, you were wearing torn clothing. So when it became to Pur Shabbat, you would either change your clothes or you would move your cloak around to the back so that the tear was not visible in the front of your clothing, and you would not be advertising that you were a mourner when it was Shabbat. And finally, you knock over your bed. Your bed was turned over during mourning. So before Shabbat, you stand your bed up again in its normal way. So these three things, Shmuel says, are chovat. They are required. You must do them so that you are not publicly mourning on Shabbat. And everyone agrees to this, that there's no public mourning on Shabbat. However, the next group of things, neter, nun, taf, resh, they stand also for three things. Ni'ilata sandal, wearing shoes, which a mourner is not supposed to do. Tashmish hamita, having marital relations, which, as we said, a mourner is not supposed to do. And rechitzat yadayim v'raglayim b'chamin arvit, reshut, and washing one's hands and face with hot water. Which is rechitza, which is something you're not supposed to do as a mourner as well. These things, he says, are a reshut. These things are permissible. If one wants to on Shabbat, they can have tashmish hamita, they can wear sandals, and they can wash with hot water, assuming here that the water is heated or used in a way that's permissible on Shabbat for every other person. For this mourner, they're allowed to do it. So this sounds very much like Rabbi Yochanan's opinion and not like Shmuel's opinion. Rav disagrees with Shmuel and says, "V'rav amar af priat harosh reshut." Rav says, even uncovering the head is not absolutely required. It's only optional if you want to uncover your head. And we'll see in a moment that Rav's reason for this is that there are other people besides mourners who cover their heads, so having one's head covered is not a bona fide sign that you're a mourner. The Gemara asks, "Ushmuel, mai shnan ilata sandal de reshut?" Shmuel, why does he learn that wearing shoes is optional? That you don't have to wear shoes, but you can. The answer is, Delav kule alme, avidi, desaimi, misanaihu. That not the whole world, kule alma, the whole world, avidi, do they do it, desaimi, that they wear, misanaihu, their shoes. In other words, some people like to go barefoot, and the fact that a person is barefoot is not a bona fide sign that you're a mourner, and therefore you don't have to wear shoes, but you may wear shoes. In other words, you're not prohibited from wearing shoes as you are during the rest of your mourning period. But this is all about whether or not it will look clearly like you're a mourner or not, and since other people don't wear shoes, you don't have to wear shoes either. But the Gemara asks, Priyat Harosh Nami, Lav Kule Alma Avidi, the Megalu Reshayu. Not the whole world does it that they have a bare head. Not everyone doesn't cover their head. There are some people who do cover their head, so even if your head is covered, it won't be a bona fide sign that you're a mourner. That's the question of the Gemara. In other words, they want to say, not only should wearing shoes be a reshut, but also Priyat HaRosh, like Rav, should be a reshut as well. So the Gemara answers, Shmuel Etayne. Shmuel has a reason why he distinguishes between the two. And the reason is, the Amar Shmuel, Kol Kera She'eno Bishat Chimum Eino Kera. This is not related to our topic, but the Gemara will come back to it, which is, when you tear kriya, when you tear your clothing, it has to be done bishat chimum, at a time of heat. In other words, a time of strong emotion. And the halacha is going to define what's a time of extreme emotion, either at the moment when the soul leaves the body, or at the moment when you are burying, the last time when you see them, when you're about to bury them. There are certain times that are very emotional times. And Shmuel says you can only tear kriya at a time that's a very emotional time, but not at any point during the whole mourning process. Okay, so that's neither here nor there. We'll come back to that. But here's the part that's important to us. When we talk about covering one's head, we're not talking about just covering one's head. We're talking about covering one's head the way a Yishma'elite covers their head, the way a Bedouin covers their head, which is covering the whole face almost. And the next line explains, Mechvi Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman demonstrated, Ad Gubei Didaikna. Not 100% clear what this means. Guve would seem to be related to the word gav, which is the back, but Rashi translated as gumot, as pits. Daikna seems to be related to the word for diukno, which means his visage. So it means until the bottom of his face, or until the sunken part of his face. So most people understand this to mean that the top of your hood comes down all the way over your face, so that it's shadowing it. Less like a hood and more like what we would call a cowl, like the way a monk would have their face cowled so that your face is shadowed. There are disputes among the Rishonim as to whether or not the nose has to be covered. Rashi seems to indicate that the nose has to be covered. Others say that it can be covered diagonally so that the nose is not covered, but half of the face is covered. But in any way, most people who cover their heads, maybe cover their heads like with a hat, or even a hood that goes up into the edge of your hair, but if you cover your head so that your whole face is cast into shadow, that's real atifah. So the reason that Shmuel says that it's required to not do that on Shabbat is because he's talking about that. So a person could theoretically cover their head, but they could not shadow their face by pulling their hood all the way over their face on Shabbat. Atifah is one of those things that we don't do anymore. There's some people that try to make a nod towards doing it. If they wear a hat, they try to pull the brim down or something like that. But more or less, it's not part of our mourning rituals nowadays. Let's just do one more line. Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lo Shanu. We didn't learn these three things, the three things that are required and the three things that are optional. Ela she'ein lo min alin baraglav. Except when he doesn't have shoes on his feet. Avo yesh lo min alin baraglav. But if he's wearing shoes, min alin mochichin alav. The shoes are the ones that prove the case. So this seems to be the opposite of what we said before, because we said some people go barefoot and some people wear shoes, so it didn't seem like shoes were such a strong indicator of mourning. But this opinion, which we follow in halacha, as we paskin this way, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, is that as long as you're wearing shoes, then you don't have to worry so much about whether or not your head is covered, or whether or not your bed is turned over. It seems like the other things are not so required, that the main way of showing that you're not mourning on Shabbat is by wearing shoes. As soon as they see a person who is in mourning wearing shoes, it doesn't strike them as a mourner anymore. There's some dispute as to whether or not shoes only applies to covering one's head, or to the other items that are mentioned here as well. That's a dispute among the Rishonim. Okay, we'll stop there. Two lines up in...